Welcome back to episode number 259 of the Dust Safety Science Podcast. This is the podcast for building a global community around process safety and industries handling combustible dust. I'm your show host, Dr. Chris Cloney. In today's episode, we are back for part two of protecting equipment from dust explosions, and we're doing that with Bob Comer. Bob, welcome back to the Dust Safety Science Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
I'm excited to go through the kind of second part of this podcast discussion on your book, Explosion Vented Equipment System Protection Guide, and talk about the second half, explosion relief and protection systems. We had a really interesting discussion last week on structural analysis and design for reinforcing dust handling systems. We talked a bit about Bob's background, why he thought the book was important to get out, some of the elements of the book, structure analysis and explosion relief, how they're related, how the book goes, sort of a simplified process of assessing the loading on dust collection systems or on dust handling systems, and also doing structural analysis to then determine what kind of reinforcements needed. We talked a bit about the explosion relief and protection system side as well. And that's what we're going to kind of come back to in today's episode. We're going to talk about what kind of data you should have for your explosion protection system, how to design or verify the explosion relief system, some common mistakes, get a bit into some other areas like grounding, housekeeping, and more that go into protection of systems that are handling combustible dust. Bob is a life member of the National Society of Professional Engineers. He served as president in the New Jersey Morris County Association of Professional Engineers and Land Surveyors for 2 years. He holds 7 patents. He retired as the site engineering manager for M&M Myers and has been a consultant to Hazard Research, Inc. for the last 25 years. He has been a consultant to plants over the world and analyzing over 200 dust explosion vented equipment systems. We covered a lot of that last week on the podcast in terms of the structural analysis side before getting into the explosion protection side here today. To kind of jump into the discussion, I talked a bit about this last week, but I want to circle around to it. Now, you made some really good points in that just having explosion vent panels is not enough on a dust collector or on a piece of equipment that's handling combustible dust. You need to have the design information for that protection system as well as the material properties. I just want to see, can you kind of walk through these points again for the audience just to make sure that they have a good understanding of why you need these parameters and just not, you know, any sort of vent or door will do on a dust collector?
Yes, these dust collectors are not very good pressure vessels. And even though you may have a properly vented element on the unit, the flowing pressure, which is piece of red, and that's the standard that everybody works to, piece of red can be higher than the allowable stress, allowable pressure in the unit or in the whole system. So you have to really check structurally to see if it's capable of withstanding piece of red. So that was the basis of part number one. Now, part number two is based on simplifying NFPA 68, that's standard on explosion protection by deflagration venting. And part number two has examples of the various dust collection system configurations showing dust explosion vent locations, dust collector geometry. And if you've ever seen NFPA 68, it can be intimidating and seem complex to someone looking at it for the first time. These examples in part two will simplify the various approaches and the calculations required. Any competent company engineer will understand the concepts presented in the book and can determine the explosion relief vent size if required, and the explosion flowing pressure P-red. I've simplified the analysis so that you don't have to go through all of the descriptions in NFPA 68. The explosion vent panel is not enough to ensure a safe system. If your dust collection system does not have an explosion vent or does not have documentation or information on the drawings, these would specify the explosion flowing pressure. If you don't have that information, process dust analysis must be performed. And that's where part two comes in. The explosion flowing pressure, P-red, is the pressure that the system will have to withstand without deformation of the components of the system. And if your process dust changes, you must reanalyze for any of those changes. The dust explosibility index, KST, and the max pressure, P-max. I've got table of the dust characteristics for various materials presented in the book. However, the dust is to be tested in accordance with ASTM standard E1226, standard method for pressure and rate of pressure rise for combustible dust. The table values are used for estimating purposes only, and you really have to back it up with tested values to ensure a proper design. KSTM Pmax may vary for a given dust due to particle size distribution, chemical composition, and moisture in the dust. Only testing will give you the actual dust characteristics. Square, rectangular, and cylindrical dust collectors are presented and analyzed with the proper geometry and effective volumes calculated. The venting analysis per PRED, all of those calculations are in metric systems, so I've provided a table of conversion factors to make that a little simpler. Also, the location of an explosion vent on the dust collector is significant, and the examples cover these possible locations: near the top of the dust collector, near the bottom of the dust collector, on top of the dust collector. And there's a different analysis for each location. Part two provides examples for existing dust handling systems with explosion relief elements already sized and attached. It also provides analysis of new systems to ensure that the explosion relief burst element is properly sized during the fabrication process so that you can get ahead of the game if you've ordered a unit.
Yeah, thanks for walking through that, Bob. And I think, as I mentioned last week on the podcast, one of the things I really appreciate about this book is that it's quite practical and that tells you the different things that are needed along the way when there's an assumption or an easier way to kind of handle doing a calculation. It's sort of provided in the book as well. What are some of the common mistakes that you see made in the design of closure and protection systems in the field that you've seen over 200 of these sort of installations? What are the kind of common families of mistakes and issues that you see come up?
Yeah, one is the effect of the duct back pressure on the flowing pressure PRED. The book covers that, analyzing duct back pressure and friction in the duct. And if you have a bend in the duct, you'll have resistance to flow. That has to be considered. PRED is not adequate on its own. Also, a major mistake is not providing a filter bag cage on the inlet to the explosion relief vent. If the vent opening is next to the bags, filter bags, the filter bags bend and block the flow, and you can have an exceedingly high pressure. So there's a design for a filter bag cage that you have to install on the inlet to the relief vent. You don't want the bags clogging that opening. Another mistake usually is not considering the reaction force on the duct and the dust collector. When that gas expels, it can induce a back pressure of several thousand pounds that might cause instability on your system, might tend to turn over your dust collector. The anchors that hold it have to be adequate. That's pretty much the worst mistakes.
Yeah, so we got kind of three families there, not including the duct back pressure, not considering the blockage by the filter bags, and then the reaction forces on the dust collector. And all threes are really important, right?
Right.
Depending on the duct, if that's not accounted for, then the pressure that's released from that explosion won't be released fast enough. And this can cause a whole host of issues, cause the PRED to be higher than expected, which can cause rupture of the enclosure. Can also cause the ducting to the flanges to kind of open up and eject a fireball of the side of the ducting. The filter bag cages, or not having the cages and having the filter bag blocking the vent opening, is the same sort of thing. You're not going to get that release of pressure. And the reaction forces is actually kind of an interesting one, because a lot of people don't think about it, but there are some videos out there, some of the old testing sites, where they didn't bolt down the dust collectors enough during venting tests, and they see they knock them over while they're doing some of these tests as well. The same, I've never seen a video of it actually happen on a site, but the same sort of thing can happen is if an explosion happens and those anchor bolts aren't strong enough, then it can actually tip it over, which is quite dangerous depending on where that's located, if there's any people in the vicinity.
That's right. And if it's an outside unit, you have the wind loads in addition. You could have an expulsion of the hot gases creating a back force. You could have the wind loads in the same direction. So everything has to be considered. And there's a section on unit stability.
Yeah, great point on that. We talked last week quite a bit on explosion protection, actually more so than I had originally planned, but I just got into the checklist that was at the front of the book saying if you don't have these couple of things figured out, then go to the second part of the book and figure them out. So I spent quite a bit of time talking about that last week on the podcast. You do mention a couple of other things in the book on grounding and bonding, on host keeping, on some of those other things. Can you walk through what other considerations people be looking at in terms of their overall safety around their dust collection systems or even ignition sensitivity in there? What's in the other chapters on this grounding, bonding, and host keeping aspects?
Right. Grounding and housekeeping are equally important to venting. Grounding is necessary to preclude inadvertent ignition of a dust cloud, and that can happen from a number of different things. I mentioned one in particular in the first podcast. A metal grid located just inside the access door, is used by a technician to change filter bags, etc. And this was ungrounded and was acting like a capacitor. And this caused a spark and a dust explosion in the dust collector. So that's one example of not noticing something that's supposed to be grounded. There are many grounding requirements and designs listed in the book. And some examples are the dust collector bags, the bag cages, and the nozzles must be grounded. It's a good idea to replace all carbon steel bolts, nuts and washers with 304 stainless steel, and that way you prevent non-conductive rust from forming at the contact points, which would insulate it, and you have another capacitor problem. So a lot of designs are in the book for bonding, joints on piping, some couplings that need bonding. So those are considered. And housekeeping is an important part. That is extremely important. You have to prevent hazardous dust from accumulating on surfaces, and the allowable limit, according to NFPA 68, is a 32nd of an inch on at least 5% of the floor area. But the floor area is calculated to include dust on beams, ducts, equipment, etc. So you're talking about a large area. And vacuuming is the preferred method of cleaning. But the vacuum cleaners must be approved for use in the dusty areas. Compressed air blowing, brushing, or broom cleaning is not to be used, as dust could become airborne and spread to surfaces.
Yeah, both those are really important topics, and I want to spend a little extra time on the grounding and bonding piece because you mentioned that in the podcast episode last week that that was the reason behind an incident that you had experience with in the past.
Right.
And it's really easy to do, right? If you do go and get if you do ground and bond your dust collector filters, then you think, okay, everything's good. We're in good shape here. But if you have, I think in that case it's like an access stand or something, some sort of grating in there. Or even using the wrong, bolts that rust. Like there's many different ways that these electrostatic hazards can build up. What kind of preventive maintenance should people be looking at on this? Like how would they determine that something like the grate that you mentioned, or even the bolts or something like that, are having an impact? What kind of things should be checking on a regular basis to make sure that this is not going to be able to build up a charge?
It's not usually a regular basis, but I would assume a yearly basis might be adequate to go and check grounding. If you've originally grounded properly, it should last a year without any problem, unless there's maintenance done and they forget to connect a cable over a joint or something like that. So a visual inspection of the systems is required. Make sure that all grounding straps are in place. The bolts are on, just general information like that. Plus, if you're using an ohmmeter and go around and check for the proper grounding conditions, you can do that also on a yearly basis.
Yeah, that helps a lot. And I want to dig into that because you mentioned that that caused that explosion. I actually forgot because we recorded 2 weeks ago now and we actually had our dust safety conference in the middle. So I've sat through now about 45 presentations on combustible dust since we last spoke. So I forgot that they had that part in there. So we covered grounding and bonding. We covered host keeping. I want to kind of to circle around and close things out on these two episodes, talk a bit about the experience that folks should have to be able to do these type of assessments. And when we talk about type of assessments, we're talking about assessing the, you know, the strength of dust collection enclosures, verifying PRED calculations based on venting. You know, what kind of experience should somebody have before taking on some of these assessments? And then what are some examples of indicators that companies should be bringing in outside help to support them with these type of projects? I want to kind of get both out there. What experience do you think somebody should have? And then if you know, a company can't sort of answer these couple of basic questions, or you know, what are some indicators that they might want to bring in somebody in that has more experience in this area?
Yeah, I ran this subject as the Professional Engineer Society. Didn't want to have something where you had to have a PE to do the analysis. A company engineer does not have to be a PE. He can do analysis for his company. And a licensed or competent unlicensed engineer, if he has education and experience and understands the concepts presented in the book, can meet the needs of his company. He could ensure that the company is in compliance with the new standards of dust collection systems by mitigating the exposed risk. He's legally allowed to do that for his company. Few companies with multiple dust collection systems with various process dust. I analyzed one system, prepared a detailed report covering the venting analysis and reinforcing design. I then spent a couple of hours with in-house engineers to teach them the procedures. They then analyzed the rest of the systems to my satisfaction. So these engineers were perfectly capable of doing this analysis and understanding what was going on. And if the company does not have an engineer, or an engineer that doesn't feel competent, comfortable, they should hire a PE consultant with the right experience to support them. Now, proper experience, there aren't too many around like that. So it's possible he could use the book or other information and get information from NFPA, and he'd be able to do the support for any company that needs him. But I really recommend that the in-house engineers do the job and they're responsible.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I mean, there's a lot of trains of thought on here. We've talked about terms like qualified person and requirements for assessing dust hazards across entire sites and the pros and cons of having people inside a company do assessments versus outside a company. It's there's more to it than we can get to in this podcast episode. And even I've done multi-hour long presentations on some of this stuff. Even if you have somebody internal that is competent, you may want to bring outside help in as a mentorship, as a verification, so that things like pressure from leadership, necessity to get the job done quick, not getting things, like there's things that come into play when you have stuff internal, but also if you have the processes in place to block those out so they're not hampering the assessment, and you have somebody that has the experience to be able to do the assessment, then there's also no reason why you can't do those sort of things in-house. You just kind of need to make sure that one, you know, one, they have the abilities, the skills, the understanding to do it and to feel confident doing it. And then two, that they are able to, you know, negate some of the things that happen when you don't have any outside help on this stuff. Any thoughts or input on that, Bob?
Other than checking your calculations.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. And like I said, I think the book is a huge step to make it more accessible for folks to be able to do some of this stuff. In a lot of cases, it's going to be a good idea to have somebody like you mentioned, you know, take a look at it that's done it before, whether or not that's somebody that's inside your company that's already has the experience, and then you're training and mentoring more junior staff, or that's an outside help that you bring in as well. Any other words for the audience in terms of equipment design or verification and analysis of exposure protection systems? Anything you want to leave people off with before we close up for today?
Yeah, I can't stress enough the importance of a complete evaluation of the system. I have a few notes here on general information. You should wire the explosion vent burst sensor to shut down the system when activated by an explosion. You don't want the system continue to run. Install a magnet above the inlet to a mill to remove trapped metal from entering that could cause a spark. Install a vibration switch on any mill that will shut down the system if normal amplitude is exceeded. And that could go for screw conveyors or rotary valves, anything like that that may cause friction and cause heat. Install bearing temperature sensors on rotating equipment. And these would shut down the system if you have an explosion event or temperatures that go beyond a certain limit. There's also weather covers. I don't know if we covered that in the first part one, but you want to have a cover over your duct so you don't have birds, animals, insects, rain, and snow from entering. That could cause a blockage. And the book provides unique cover designs that are practical and inexpensive that I developed. And they've been designed to wind, ice, and snow criteria. And if you have a horizontal facing upward duct discharge, you're limited on the amount of snow and ice that would be allowed on there. You have to keep loads below 2.5 pounds per square foot. Otherwise, you have a restraint on allowing it to vent. So you want to keep it at a 45-degree angle so that it sheds the snow or ice. And if you're going to have upward-facing ductwork, it should only be used where no snow or ice is possible in the southern areas.
Yeah, really helpful stuff. Any other points to leave off on, or is that it for today?
One other item. The cover has to resist breaking when subjected to wind force, too. And these ducts covers are designed to take that force but fracture when the venting pressure reaches a half psi. So the design covers conditions anyway, atmospheric conditions.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't actually got to that part of the book yet. I'm about halfway through now. So I'll check with the covering sections once I get to that part. I want to say thank you for coming on the podcast for these 2 weeks, Bob, going through some of this material. Like I said, when I read through, this was different than many books I'd read on dust explosions before. Not a lot of theory, more practical, more implementation. I think it does make a lot of things hopefully accessible again to companies, to competent engineers, licensed or unlicensed, to do some of this. There probably is still a wider debate, and we may even get some emails on things like qualified person and dust hazard analysis, more broadly speaking, in NFPA 652 and other standards. But at the end of the day, and I say this, I've said this before on the podcast, if I can convince everyone that needs a dust hazard analysis to do one today, we are woefully unprepared. We don't have enough people to be able to meet that need. So we need to start building the tools, the education pathways, the material, the content for folks to be able to do at least some of these assessments themselves or under supervision or whatever the mechanism is. And regardless of what the mechanism is, I think a book like this is a great help in that area to make some of this information more accessible. So I want to say thank you, Bob, for writing it. We will include links in the show notes for everyone if they want to go get a copy, and I would recommend doing that. I just want to say thank you again for coming on the podcast and talking about it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to present this with the new dust hazard analyses that everyone's doing. They're finding out that they need help. And
yeah.
I was quite limited in helping more than a few companies at a time. So this is very important.
Well, I think this will get out more broadly and be helpful to folks, Bob. So I say thank you again. Maybe we'll get you back on the podcast in the future, talk through some other areas in this stuff. And I hope you have a great week ahead. And thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much. Take care, Chris.
Thanks, Bob. Talk soon. So you've been listening to myself, Dr. Chris Cloney, and Bob Comer, and we've been talking about protecting equipment from dust explosions. This is part two in a two-part series. First part, we covered structural analysis and design for reinforcing dust handling systems. And then today we covered a little more briefly explosion relief and protection systems. This is all based on a book that was recently released called Explosion Vented Equipment System Protection Guide. We will have links in the show notes at dustsafetyscience.com/258 and 259 for these two episodes, where you can get that on Wiley Publishing and also on Amazon. It's a pretty straightforward read in terms of not a humongous book to get through, but full of really useful information, pictures, photos showing how to do some of these assessments. And again, it's more practical than a lot of the books that have come out before. That's why we want to have it on the podcast. We talked today through considerations for explosion protection, what to do if you don't have some of the documentation and the data that's sort of needed to understand the design of your vent on your system and what you might need to do there. You may need to do testing, need to redo the calculations. And there are process for all that process in the book as well. Covers things like what to do if you have vent ducts, filter cages, or avoiding filters from blocking the vent, open area, reaction forces. We talked about a lot of other areas like grounding and bonding, host keeping. There's some really good practical tips in both of these areas, specifically on grounding and bonding. Use couplings, grounding straps, wires, how to understand and assess whether or not the whole system is grounded and bonded, and a lot of really useful information there as well on this. And that was really, we talked through some things around qualified persons, some considerations on what sort of experience would be needed to provide some of these assessments, and got some of Bob's really good input on that as well. So I want to say thank you to Bob for coming on. I want to say thank you for listening to the Dust Safety Science Podcast. Hope you have a safe, productive week ahead. I appreciate everything you're doing. The industry's handling combustible dust. Being safe with the work that you're doing out there every day. Keep it up.